live from the Poly Market Studio in L.A. It's the Young Turks. You're about to watch what we call an extended clip of the Young Turks. And the reality is it's somewhere in the middle. It's a little longer than our YouTube clips, but it's actually shorter than the whole 2-hour show, which you can get if you're a member. You can get it ad-free, and make sure you catch every news story we do that day. You're going to love it as a full show. That's at tytnetwork.com/join. Thanks for watching.
And then that happened. So a couple of things that I like that just happened. One, Skip's like, let's get on with it.
It's too powerful to wait.
Okay, what I was saying is, it is a particularly powerful panel today. All right, but now you see them. So. Jen Kuger, John Iderlo, Jen Bridey joins us. Again, I just wasn't with you the last time you did it, so great to have you back. Jen does a podcast called Congressional Dish, which when I first heard about it, I thought there's some chance you're a female Michael Schur. So you don't know what that means, and you don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Trust me, in a good way.
Yes, that would mean that you're Miss Epic, which is not a bad thing. Okay.
Well, thank you.
Or Epic Politics Woman. Because his nickname is Epic Politics Man. So
he's an encyclopedia of information about Congress, basically.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. In a scary fashion.
And Abigail Suzanne Martin.
Thank you.
I get the bios no matter what, whether I know the people or not on the Friday Power Panels. But this is why, because I never knew your name was Abigail Suzanne Martin.
Well, thank you.
I've never heard that said.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate that.
Interesting.
Yeah. I always hated the name Abigail, but I like it now. I'm embracing it, taking
it back. Abigail's a fun name.
Thank
you're
you.
Crazy.
I always thought it sounded like an old colonial woman. Oh,
you do.
Abigail.
You do.
Those were hardy women, okay?
Okay.
The founding mother.
Right. You are the founding mother of the Empire Files, yes, on Tal Sur and YouTube. So, all right. So we got a lot of stories for you guys. North Korea might be back on. Harvey Weinstein, is he going to get convicted? That's a little bit later in the program, and there's an excellent chance that he's not, which is unfortunate. I'll explain why later. But also later in this hour, the DNC decides that they are not going to be neutral in the primaries.
Shocked.
I know. Say it with me.
Of course.
Anyway, but we'll dive into that because I think it's a really important story. And then you're not going to believe another shift from Dianne Feinstein. And it's not about Feinstein. It is and it isn't, right? Mm-hmm. It's about politicians overall. Like speaking of like colonials, like they think that there's no internet.
Yeah.
I don't know if they think there's television or like just like pamphlets or whatever. Oh, the pamphleteers will never catch up with my actual positions.
Yeah.
Right. So that's an amazing story. So lots of amazing stories. John, leading the proceedings today, what do you got for us?
It's pretty see-through, too. I mean, for years she said she heard Yanny, and now it's Laurel. All of a sudden, when the primary's on, little suspicious.
You're going to love that story.
Anyway, right. Sorry to spoil it for you. Okay, let's jump into the news. And I am only slightly worried the power panel graphic is going to start to play while I'm talking. I'm kidding. Yesterday, Donald Trump announced that he was going to be pulling out of the planned June 12th summit with North Korea in Singapore. And he released a letter that was, I would say, by Donald Trump standards, quite reasonable. It only had one reference to our horrific nuclear arsenal and a bit of an implied threat there. But other than that, he called him His Excellency and all of that. And so we've been wondering, how is North Korea going to respond? Well, they have actually released a statement of their own. We're going to read some sections of this from you. This is coming out of the Vice Minister of Foreign Affairs in North Korea, who said, we have inwardly highly appreciated President Trump for having made the bold decision, which any other US president dared not, and made effort for such a crucial event at the summit. We would like to make known to the US side once again that we have the intent to sit with the US side to solve problem regardless of ways at any time. They did, however, address some of his slightly more inflammatory comments. As for the, quote, tremendous anger and open hostility referred to by President Trump, it is just a reaction to the unbridled remarks made by the US side, which has long pressed the DPRK unilaterally to scrap nuclear program ahead of the summit. So that is believed to be a reference to their attacks against Mike Pence, but also earlier John Bolton, because of the talk about a Libya-style solution to the nuclear problem there, which, if you don't know, history was a particularly violent, invadey, sodomy-type solution to the problem when it came to overthrowing Libya's leadership there. Understandably, Kim Jong-un was not interested in that. And so now we have the pulling out of the summit, we have the response, and we have some idea from Donald Trump as of today how he will respond. We have a short snippet for you.
Now we'll see what happens. It could even be the 12th. We're talking to them now. They very much wanted to do it. We'd like to do it. We're going to see what happens. John, everybody plays games. You know that. You know that better than anybody.
So I think we all understood that every phase of this was a negotiating tactic, but I love sending the letter and then calling what you did a game a day later. But anyway, we might still have a June 12th summit. We never know.
Yeah. Good news, first
yeah,
of all.
Yeah, it's good news.
Right? Second of all, I love the amusing parts of these otherwise intense and possibly world-ending situations. It's not world-ending because nobody else is really on North Korea's side. It's not World War III. It's just like it would end the lives of millions of people. But so I like to find the amusing part of it. So in their statement, I like that they were like, they said, we inwardly highly appreciated what Trump did. Because externally we didn't. We called his vice president literally a political dummy.
Okay. At least is accurate.
Yeah. So, which is true. Is true. But apparently, internally, inwardly, they were like, man, that guy's brilliant.
I think what this shows is, above all, that North Korea and South Korea want peace. Overwhelming polls, I mean, Moon really, really campaigned on this. And what this whole thing shows us is that it doesn't matter if they want peace. The U.S. empire still has this kind of bizarre arbitration of whether they can or cannot sit down for these negotiations. I think every story that's told about the summit and about North Korea in general, we're missing this giant framing. How did the U.S. shape the peninsula? And also, the U.S. is the belligerent actor carrying out genocidal threats, carrying out these war games every day. I mean, the denuclearization thing, the U.S. basically, they want the U.S. to pull out these Trident submarines that could obliterate North Korea. I mean, we are carrying out war games on a daily basis around there. So I think it's important, you know, not just denuclearizing North Korea, but denuclearizing the U.S. Around the area.
And that's why the Libya model thing is so disturbing if you're on North Korea's side of this, because it was after Libya gave up their nuclear weapons, which is exactly what we're telling North Korea to do. We went in there and then destroyed the regime and the country. It still hasn't recovered, and that happened in 2011. Well, so that's a very scary thing for Bolton, that psycho of all people, to say. I can see why they would react poorly.
Also, it's easy for Trump to say, you know, we all play these games. And obviously in negotiation, there's some back and forth, and you pull out when you don't really mean that you're pulling out and all that stuff. But in terms of setting up some sort of big deal, you reference Libya as a great example where it didn't exactly work out for them the way they thought it was going to. And then we have Iran, where we're like, okay, we're going to relieve these sanctions if you dial down your nuclear program. They do it. We certify month after month after month that they're abiding by it, and then we put the sanctions back on anyway. If you were a foreign country, why would you feel that you could negotiate in good faith, let alone all of the historical reasons not to believe? I mean, even recently in terms of deals with this presidency, why would you believe that you would get anything approaching good faith out of them in any negotiation?
And to be fair, we're in a Korean standoff, if you will, because the North Koreans also don't negotiate in good faith, and they also violate all of their treaties. And if you're talking about denuclearization of the area and the peninsula, I'm totally in. So they get rid of their nukes, we withdraw our submarines, wonderful, perfect. I'll do that deal right now. Now, of course, we are not going to denuclearize overall for North Korea. That's just, whether you think that's a good idea or a bad idea, never, ever, not even within a billion years would that ever happen.
Right? Bold move.
Right. So if the North Koreans have some inkling that we're going to head in that direction, or that they're going to get to keep their nukes, none of this, the yelling at each other or being nice to each other, is going to work out. So if the idea is, though, get nukes out of that region, it could totally work out, and I hope that it does, and I'm encouraged by that. The thing I'm more encouraged by is, so far, it looks like today, on day whatever we're on, the palace coup has receded a little bit, because what John Bolton and Mike Pence did was in direct violation of Donald Trump's wishes. They went out there and tried to start a war. There's no other reason to mention the Libyan model unless you're trying to antagonize, not saying, hey, if you don't do a deal, we'll hit you. That, we say that all the time. Obama said that. Everybody says that, right? No, the Libyan model means if you do the deal, we're going to kill you anyway.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
So that's the reason why Bolton and Pence said that. Of course, and they think, well, I can say it in public and the North Koreans will understand, but our leader is so stupid, he won't understand that we're actually doing a coup of his policy right on national television. So I don't think that Trump got read into it, but at least right now he's saying, no, we're back on, we're back to, you know, being friendly. So for now, Bolton and Pence have not succeeded in driving us to war, so that's great news. Mm-hmm. And on the gamesmanship, I'll also be kind, fair, whatever you want to say to Trump, right? Look, yes, he violates his word all the time. He did it in business and he bragged about it. He's doing it in office and bragging about it. So the deals he signs are not really worth the paper they're on, historically, right? Having said that, I think the big insults, even though they're childish, but the over-the-top threats and the fact that he might actually be insane, for the moment being, has helped the process a little bit in just this scenario, right? Because the North Koreans saying, we inwardly highly appreciate the president, they don't say that unless they're a little scared. So I'm give the devil his due.
Yeah, I mean, what did we think was going to happen with John Bolton coming on board? I mean, this is a guy who wrote an op-ed, I think, for either the New York Times or the Washington Post, saying we need to preemptively attack North Korea first. I mean, that is insane. So, yeah, Trump is a con artist. He talks out of both sides of his mouth. But like you said, I mean, there's people actively working for war with North Korea, and they're not going to let up easily. Plus, the defense contractor's stock just plummeted after this peace deal was even declared. So there's a lot of pressures for, you know, but Trump could have came out and reasserted that he wanted this. So he's, you know, he got taken over.
I don't know why they would start to panic over this. We've got Iran coming up.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You're going to make a lot of money there. Yeah.
It is interesting, though, to watch the people in the administration, because, like, Pompeo seems to actually be working towards a good result in North Korea. And James Mattis, too, came out this morning and he was like, we want this summit to happen. But then you have Bolton and Pence. It's just very interesting, this split, this dynamic between this side trying to get Trump to do one thing and this side trying to manipulate him. It's just this weird show, really.
So, Jen, that's a great point. And so that's the neocons versus other parts of the establishment that are slightly more sane, the Mattis of the world, who are like, we got to look, I'm going to be a defense contractor one day, but Iran's plenty, right? Let's not bite off more than we can chew. I know that doing war with Iran and North Korea at the same time, probably not a good idea. So that's this the sane, terrible warmonger part of the administration versus the insane part, right?
Yeah.
How's it going to wind up? How does this movie end? No one knows, partly because Trump is so easy to manipulate. You don't know if the neocons are going to win or the Mattis camp's going to win. And you don't know on which day they're going to win and which day they're going to be reversed. You don't know who the last person in the room is going to be. You don't know if the last thing the North Koreans say is going to be an insult or a compliment. Mm. And even after the deal is done, it's never really done because it's Trump. Yeah. So you have to hope that they make a deal and then hold on for dear life.
Yeah. Do you want to go to our first break?
Sure. Okay. It's a little early, but we'll take the break.
Well, we got a big block of some domestic politics.
Yeah. And okay. Not only are we going to do the DNC story, more good news before we hit the bad news. That doesn't happen often. Congress does something positive. How is that for? You're not going to believe it when we come back.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. You're only halfway through, so hold, stay right here. Just want to remind you, if you want to get all 5 segments of the Young Turks commercial free, these are just 2 of them. Every day we do it. So go to tytnetwork.com/join. And you get the whole 5 segments, 2 hours, ad-free. Do it now.
Oh, I like that. Whole new hour, whole new power panel. Drop it. All right, we're going to do a bunch of things here. First, let me introduce the panel. Ida Rodriguez, fan favorite here. Melvin Roberts joins us. Melvin, this is the first time we're doing it together.
Yeah.
So I know you do a lot of things, and I know you're on Access Hollywood, KTLA, Morning News, Lib TV, et cetera. But my favorite was 2 theater shows that you were in, plays you were in. Alex in Wonderland?
Yes.
Okay, that sounds fun. I don't know what's in it, but it's definitely fun.
That was the children's theater piece.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
children's theater piece, yeah. Right.
And the Hot Chocolate Nutcracker. Yeah. That could go in a lot of ways.
Yes, it could go in a lot of different ways. Yeah. It was a great show. Another children's theater piece.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And Brett Ehrlich's going to present today. Good to have you, Brett. So let me read you guys some tweets. Before I do that, they reminded me, you know, I was telling you about the tank tops that we got now. That's the summer sale. I forgot the sale part. It's actually 30% off. So if you go to shoptyt.com and you're getting these tank tops, cool. 30% off. Make sure you check that out. Okay, now, some tweets that from the last hour. Tim Klein Jr. says, I know that you believe that Alison Hartson will make the runoff and face Dianne Feinstein. He says, I don't believe that, because Alison Hartson is just going to flat out win on June 2nd. Well, even if that was the case and she came in number 1, which would be astounding, she would still have to go to the runoff. You can't just win in California. The top 2 vote getters must advance, no matter what their party is, must advance to the general election. The Bath Magician says it was truly terrific first hour power panel today, guys. Thanks. Wait till you get a load of the second hour power panel. Q Muzu Music with a Q at the end on YouTube Super Chat says, come to PlayStation View. I just got that PlayStation View. Hold. You never know. We're going to be in a lot of places. We just got on YouTube TV, so this is on YouTube TV. But others might be coming, so I appreciate it. I like this Stabby 666. First of all, fun name.
It's intense.
Yeah, it attacks the trolls. It makes sense, give it his name. He says, I love all the little trolly kids here pushing up the view count and leaving channels like Alex Jones empty. Thanks for supporting TYT, kids.
Nice.
All right, fun for everybody. All right, Brett, what do you have for us?
All right, we got a lot of show, so let's get right into it. First, Harvey Weinstein was a big story this morning. Harvey Weinstein made his perp walk into the courthouse to post $1 million bail, which he essentially just dropped on the table and walked out. Harvey Weinstein, as a consequence of his this morning's activities, will be fitted with a GPS device because he has been charged with rape and he cannot leave the area of New York or Connecticut. The 66-year-old was charged with first and third degree rape for incidents in 2004 and 2013. Here's how it was described, the video we have, by the assistant district attorney.
The charges here today are a result of months of investigation and deliberate analysis of the evidence and the law. That investigation revealed that this defendant used his position, money, and power to lure young women into situations where he was able to violate them sexually. Our investigation is ongoing, and we have encouraged other survivors to come forward.
that little reaction that he had when he heard violate them sexually, it was like this weird little dismissive. What do you make of that moment?
Yeah. I think he was just having a flashback to potted plants.
Yeah. They got me.
Yeah.
His lawyer made some statements, which we pulled video of. Here is his lawyer, Benjamin Braffman, who his first statement was about essentially hinting at whether the jury will believe this and whether they can find the right kind of jury in his mind at all. Take a look.
Many of these allegations are long overdue, quite frankly, having been made about events that are alleged to have occurred many years ago. They were not reported to the police at the time these events occurred, and I anticipate that the women who have made these allegations, when subjected to cross-examination, in the event we even get that far, that the charges will not be believed by 12 people, assuming we get 12 fair people who are not consumed by the movement that seems to have overtaken this case.
So the movement that seems to have overtaken this case.
All I have to say about him is Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. Hope he disappears.
What is it with the old school New York guys in the hair? Right?
It's amazing.
Trump's doctor, Weinstein's lawyer, right? Anyway, some potential bad news here. I read a fairly persuasive article by Elro Nanos on Law and Crime about how he might get away. Of course, there's a million things that could happen between now and then, but our job is to analyze, right? So, first of all, let's also note a terrible thing that the lawyer said. He said,
at TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your activity more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's expressvpn.com/TYT. Check it out today.
Harvey Weinstein didn't invent the casting couch. Ugh.
Yeah.
Like, that's, in the court of public opinion, that's about as bad a thing as you can say. Like, what's the big deal? Everybody was raping the women that were coming in, right? Mm-hmm. In the actual court, that might not be as bad as it sounds to us. So he's going to say, well, since it was such an industry standard that you would have to sleep for a job, it might have been that the women assumed that they were part of that process. Hence, it was not against their will. That it's in Hollywood, you must sleep for a job, and they are choosing to do that. That's going to be part of his case. Now, that's going to be hard to prove what was in people's heads. Now, a really important part of this case is that because of the statute of limitations, they could not charge Harvey Weinstein with lower crimes. They had to charge him with first-degree rape and first-degree sexual assault. And because the lower crimes, especially for the 2004 case, are too old. But good news in New York is that there is no statute of limitations on rape in the first degree. Now, the bad news is that means you have to prove the highest charge possible. And so, for example, in one of the cases, they say the woman felt intimidated and threatened. But in New York law, in order to prove first degree, there is, and this is where it gets tricky, and that's where the lawyers will go to work on the jury, a threat of actual force. And was force threatened? Was force used? And then there's even another loophole. In one of these charges, it says sex, which is interpreted in older case law as intercourse, and not necessarily oral sex. And 2004 case was oral sex. So he's got his dream team because he's got all the money in the world, right? This is one of the top lawyers there is in this field. And he's going to unleash them. And so don't be surprised at the end, he's not convicted.
I think he makes a point, though, and I'm not trying to excuse Harvey Weinstein's behavior, but I think that this is a real systemic issue, and I think that Harvey Weinstein is one of the symptoms of an issue that, when you think about Bill Cosby and all of the men who are now going down, who are no longer of value to Hollywood anymore, but while they were in their heyday and all of this stuff was going on, they were being enabled. A lot of people keep talking about how they knew that these guys were doing this and no one said anything. And I think that we really need to talk about the deeper problem, which is not just Harvey Weinstein, but there is a collection of people who believe that this behavior is acceptable, and there are people who watch it happen. This big sports agent, very big time, I was sitting at dinner with my friends, walked by me without knowing me, ran his hands through my hair. Yeah. And I went off on him. But what made me so angry was that I was sitting with two men, one who worked at Nike and one who was a sports agent, and not one, they laughed it off. They didn't think that was invasive. They didn't think it was disrespectful. They told me to just simmer down. And I'm like, let a strange man walk around and caress your hair. Like, you get up and probably try to fight him, right?
If I had a dollar for every time that happened.
Yeah, you know, it was just weird. I was listening to Gwyneth Paltrow talk about how Brad Pitt told Harvey, "I would kill you." But then he went on to do Inglourious Basterds with him. Yeah. And that's the problem, is that even though you slap somebody on the wrist and say, "Hey, that's not okay," but they're still in business, they're still making money, and it's still not okay.
I think one of the other things here, too, is power and privilege.
Yes.
Right? I mean, here he is, as you said, got high-powered attorneys, have people that are out there that are able to advocate for him. Now he gets off. He's able to post that $1 million bail. Not many people can do that.
That's right.
The Human Rights Watch, there was some research that was done, and they examined like 6 countries, and 70 to 80% of people who are arrested are not able to pay. So they're sitting in jail. And in California alone, nearly 63% of prisoners in the county jails have not been sentenced, but they're serving because they can't post bail. So that's the other part of this, this discussion as well, is the power and the privilege and who he is. I mean, you know, we were talking before we came on about how Mr. Man was in first class. You know what I mean? Still flying first class a couple months ago.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. So, Melvin, great point. I thought the same thing when I saw the $1 million cash bail. And he finds that in between his couch, right?
Yeah.
And so what's the point of bail then? And the point is, unfortunately, to keep poor people in jail. And so there are now some district attorneys that are overturning that, like Larry Krasner in Philadelphia. So we're not doing cash bail anymore, because rich people and even middle class people can often pay it, and poor people can't. It's not based on the severity of the crime as much as it is on your income level. So cash bail is just a way to put poor people in prison. We don't even know that they did it. A lot of times it's like minor infractions or marijuana charges. Meanwhile, a guy who appears to be a serial rapist, allegedly a serial rapist, walks around as free as he can be because it's $1 million, which he's got easily. But that then led me to thinking, look, we don't know what's going to happen here in this case. And it's going to be tough because it's a little bit older and he's got great attorneys, etc. And one of the key parts of the case is whether the judge will allow the other instances of when women came forward and talked about what Harvey Weinstein did. And so from time to time, I tell you guys that I used to be Republican, and the only part that's left that's still conservative is the legal part. And so it drives me crazy when you cannot introduce evidence of their pattern in court. Why? Because it prevents justice. So now, it's not that you can't ever do it, but it's tough standards for when you can do it. And I know why. Hey, you don't want people judging him based on other stuff. You want him judging it on this crime, right? But if the guy's got a pattern of doing it 50 times, is that relevant to whether he did it in this case? Of course it's relevant. If they never hear that, he has a way better chance of getting off. If they do hear it, then he might be in trouble no matter how good his lawyers are.
I would say Brofman's going even further than that. He's setting up the argument that there is, even if they don't admit that kind of evidence, that he's, as that video we said proves, he's setting up, there is no one in America who has been insulated from the bias, as he's going to argue it, the bias toward my client of these ridiculous, spurious charges that don't mean anything. And he's going to move, I mean, he's moving to dismiss immediately, as according to him. But he's setting up that there, we can't even find 12 people that are going to come in with fresh ears, even if we don't let that evidence in. It's super frustrating. And then, and he's also kind of setting that up as how unfair it is to his client.
Oh, poor Harvey.
Poor Harvey.
Wasn't it Bloomberg that said he wouldn't speak ill of Harvey because Harvey was a New Yorker when it first started? Weird. Remember, it was him.
That's a thing?
Yeah, he was like...
I have to support everyone in Los Angeles?
I've been to New Yorkers. All they do is speak ill of New Yorkers.
No, but what I'm saying...
Have you ever lived in New York?
But to say that he's not going to get treated fairly in New York, that is the opinion of a very successful rich white man in New York who was like, I can't throw Harvey under the bus for the rape that he did do because he's a New Yorker, you know?
Yeah, and that whole idea that the jury cannot judge the case fairly if they've ever heard anything about it, I also don't believe that at all. They're gonna spend months in there and they're gonna hear all the evidence. So if we don't think that they could be unbiased, then let's not have jury trials.
Yeah.
This is all unfair to Harvey. Harvey, you've done this, and dozens and dozens of women have accused you of this. You've gotten off scot-free for years with Oscars in your pocket in a city where everybody knew, Brad Pitt knew you were doing this. I think we've been more than fair to you for the last 20 years.
Yeah,
sure. I mean, you had, what is it, some like 80 women that have come, but those are just the ones that have come forward, right? Okay. Imagine, I mean, the courage and the people that have not come forward and the people that have not disclosed. So that's the other thing, too. And still, this doesn't seem to be enough. And still, this man is able to walk the streets, right, because he has access and because
he has... Yeah, he's smiling in this picture. He is smiling.
Yeah, and last thing on it is, look, if they get him, they got him. Great, wonderful. If they don't get him, there are federal prosecutors in Manhattan who are also looking into this. And I would say... keep going, brothers and sisters. And ones in LA, they should look into it too. Because you just keep on trying them until at least you bankrupt them. Right? And by the way, don't get me wrong. There is double jeopardy in this country, and rightfully so, and it's in the US Constitution. You can't keep trying them in the same venue for the same crime. I'm not suggesting that. There's 80 cases here. You're not going
to
run out of victims, unfortunately.
All right, let's move on to Ireland. The Eighth Amendment of the American Constitution prevents against excessive bails and fines and punishment. The Eighth Amendment in Ireland has outlawed abortion since 1983, but there is a referendum that went on today in Ireland. Polls closed at 10 o'clock p.m. 100,000 new people registered to vote for the express purpose of overturning that referendum and essentially legalizing abortion. And has not been officially called, but according to the exit poll data, it's 68% or 69% in favor of overturning that ban on abortions, which had essentially made it so that the priorities of the life of the mother was on equal footing of the life of the fetus, and the only time you could have done it was in favor of saving the mother's life if it was in jeopardy. But that was a big turnout in Ireland today.
What is the definition of fetus in Ireland?
They were saying you can't do abortions.
So, but because I know here, or because fetus is after 24, that's one of the arguments.
It's the unborn child was how it was set up in Ireland.
Even if this wins, and it looks like it's going to win, then they're going to do legislation. It's out of the Constitution then.
Okay.
And then they're going to do legislation. And that legislation is still not going to be liberal. You're only going to get to have an abortion in the first 12 weeks, which is a tiny amount of time. You barely know you're pregnant in the first 12 weeks.
Right.
And then after that, they'll have different laws. So it's not as clear. And you'll have to take into account the life of the mother and the health of the mother, et cetera. And so they have not passed those yet if we get to that eventuality. But this was strident. No abortion under any circumstance at any time.
Well, the reason why I asked, I mean, I know what a fetus is. I've had two that don't shut up now. But
other saying is feed us, feed us.
No, but you know, that's the argument. When does life begin? What is technically, when does it become a fetus or whatever? I'm all about women's rights. I don't regulate other people's morality. Whatever your decision about your body and your heaven and whatever it is, I'm all for it. But it just seems like Ireland is on a pathway to being more progressive and more liberal and letting people choose their lifestyles. And I think that we seem to be going backwards.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's a little bit.
They're on a roll. They just got gay, same-sex marriage. Yeah. They just got a gay prime minister. Yeah. I mean, they're doing it, yeah.
Yeah. They.
I like it.
I like the snap.
Had to represent. Yeah.
There was a bunch of different initiatives in order to turn out the vote. There was a group of grandfathers that say yes, yeah. Taking to the streets. And then there was a giant movement called hashtag home to vote, where people who had moved away from Ireland, nationals who were living in, say, England or continental Europe, they moved back. Here's a video from one of the groups called hashtag called Together for Yes. Here's a part of a video that they put together to raise awareness.
Done the journey that a lot of women do in the opposite way from Liverpool, and I feel that Ireland should finally trust women, and that's why I'm voting yes.
There were people at the airport holding signs up that said, "Do you need a ride to go vote?" Like, I saw it and I am dead inside, but I was still like a little emotional looking at that, people coming together for that. I thought that was amazing.
Yeah, so I have PTSD from all the recent elections. So right. I was so worried about this one because we prepared today's show and now the exit polls are coming in when we're live.
Right.
And so I'm seeing all these emotional things and this huge movement for a yes vote, which would be to repeal this and bring choice to
choice.
Ireland.
Just choice.
And I'm like, yeah, I've seen a lot of good things. And then on election day, bam, oh,
Sorry, I was sitting next to you when Trump won. I was sitting right here, went viral.
Yeah.
We both got PTSD.
And it's all across the world, too. So, you know, Brexit happened, of course, and then some right-wing governments have won recently. But so my normal metric for this is, who's the populace? The populace has a better chance of winning all across the world. Doesn't matter what the issue is, doesn't matter which party or which side you're on, the populace has a better chance, okay? But in this case, that is not an issue, right? It's neither side is more or less populist. So I'm like, it looks good, and you know, and a lot of the people and people in the media might be in favor of it, and hence represent the pro-choice side more, and I'm keeping it real on that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how Irish media works, right? And here, our media is very conservative when it comes to financial issues, because they're run by billion-dollar corporations, but a lot of the reporters are liberal, and so on social issues, they'll paint it in a different light, and I'm being honest about that. So I was like on pins and needles. So when I saw 69%, organization that has it at 79%
right.
saying yes, repeal it. I was like, oh, thanks God. Finally.
Couldn't do it again.
Finally, the good guys win. Yes.
And it's a very Catholic country, Irish Catholic. And it's a big movement for someone, for a country that had this law. The only other comparable country in Europe to have a law like this is Malta. Everyone else has a more choice skewing laws. Here's one tweet from someone who pointed out the consequences that were facing women in Ireland at the time, should they choose to have an abortion. It said, in Ireland, a woman can face longer in prison for seeking abortion than the rapist who impregnated her. So these are the kinds of feeling with the hashtag home to vote all worked in there. Everyone was brought in on the situation, even Ed Sheeran. Ed Sheeran, we covered this on Pop Trigger. Ed Sheeran, someone used one of his songs called Small Bump, a song about his friend's miscarriage. There was a pro-life group that just started using it in its campaign, and he had to release this photo, which was reposted, saying, I have been informed that my song is being used to promote pro-life campaign, and I feel it's important to let you know I have not given approval. But like when you pull Ed Sheeran into this kind of stuff, it can't stand.
Unacceptable.
But again, these are just the exit poll data, and so we'll see. Keep following it. We reported this morning on the Damage Report, and it was just kind of in the ether. We didn't know what was going to happen because it was 40% for. Yeah. And there were a lot of undecided, but it seemed like it came down the other way.
There's one other issue here that's not spoken about nearly enough. And throughout the articles that covered this, both here in the US and internationally, they talk about how a lot of the Irish women leave to get abortions in the UK or in other countries, in other parts of Europe. Those are the rich and middle class women. So a lot of the anti-choice legislation in different states here in America or in countries in the rest of the world only affect poor women. You know, rich women get to fly out of the country and have abortions all they like. A Republican, they claim Broidy, just paid $1.6 million. He says, I didn't know whether she had the abortion or not, wink, wink, but I paid her $1.6 million for it. When you're rich, there's a lot of ways to get abortions, right? But when you're poor, that's when you're crushed and the system crushes you and you get oppressed even further. So it's a double win if they've gone in the right direction here. And one last vestige of hope for us here in the United States, as we appear to be heading in the wrong direction while the rest of the world is going, generally speaking, the right direction, especially Europe, right? I still think that the Trump era and the evangelicals that put him in office, it's their last gasp. And so demographically and also as a matter of just simply getting information, Europe is far less religious and every day grows less religious. And America every day grows less religious. We started this show 16 years ago. Back then, only 4% of Americans, and look, it varies by polls, but in one poll that we covered, only 4% of Americans did not have any religion, right? Now that number is 24%, okay? And it grows and it grows and it grows. So these guys who hold on to ancient mythology, and they're not even correct about it. As I point out every time we talk about abortion, the Bible is actually pro-abortion. Read Numbers. It says that if you think your wife cheated on you, God says you should give her a toxic potion to give her a miscarriage. Okay, that is pro-abortion in the Bible. So you're not even right about the text. But those that old mythology is slowly giving way to, very slowly, giving way to rationality. So I think we're going to win here as well. But it hasn't happened yet. Yeah. So Ireland, hold strong. Hopefully we'll join you soon.
Yeah. We got to take a break.
Yes. All right, and mind you, don't get me wrong, we are pro-choice in America, but every day they whittle it down and whittle it down. All right, we'll be right back. Thanks for watching what I hope was a lovely edition of the Young Turks. Now, you know that that is two of the five segments that we do, because that's free. We wanna have you support independent media and come watch the whole show that we do every day. That's five segments overall, no ads at all. That's at tytnetwork.com/join. Come become a member. Thanks for watching either way. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.